I was ever carried to church was this church here. And this actually was the place that the Lord told me that I was lost. And so it's a little intimidating coming here, especially seeing Brother Moran, because I made eye contact with him, and the Lord said, you're lost, and you need to go to that altar. So anytime I see Brother Moran, especially here, it's a little intimidating to me, but I'm glad I don't have to worry about that anymore. But we are thankful to be here tonight, and since it has been a long time since I've been here, I would like to give my testimony just so that you guys understand that I have been saved by the grace of God and that I have what I pray most of you have here tonight. So I don't know how old I was whenever the Lord convicted me, but it was after Brother Miller was pastor and Brother Moran was helping in a revival that night, and I don't remember what was preached, who preached, or anything. I just remember playing back there. I believe Stephanie and Emily were there, so I was back there playing with them, and Kirsten and Kimberly, and I was just, you know, middle school, I guess, just playing back there. And then I remember they had an altar call, and I stood up and was singing. I'm like, okay, I get to stretch my legs. And all I remember is Brother Moran stepped about right here, and I was standing, or I was probably right behind where Linda Kay is, and he made eye contact with me. And the Lord convicted me right then and said, you need to go to the altar and you need to go pray. You know, I knew that I was lost. And Brother Moran came back and talked to me and said, do you need to go to the altar, you know? And I was fighting back tears. And, of course, I lied to him like any person that's lost would and said, no, I don't need to go to the altar. I'm perfectly fine. So I didn't go to the altar that night. And where my parents live is an hour from here on the other side of Russellville. So I made it through that service, and we went home that night. And, of course, you know, 6880, busy road. Lord could have took me out that night, and I would have gone straight to hell. But he didn't. He saw fit for me to make it home, and made it home that night. And I got up the next morning. It was a Saturday. So my dad was out making his rounds, looking at the crops, and my mom was still asleep, and I was in the living room floor playing with all of my toys. And it was the middle of June, so I'm assuming I was probably cutting wheat in the living room floor with all my little toy combines. And the Lord convicted me again that morning. And I said, okay, well, I was alone. So I got on a love seat that we had there in the living room, and I started praying all by myself. I don't know how long I prayed, what I prayed, or anything I said, but I just remember all of a sudden I felt a peace. And I knew that the Lord had saved me. And I don't know how old I was or anything, but I didn't tell that I was saved for many years. And we were going to Fairview in Woodburn, which is where I'm still a member at. And Brother Ron came up to me one Sunday morning and asked me if I was lost, or asked me if I needed to go to the altar. I said, no, sir. He said, well, are you lost? I said, no, sir. And he said, well, are you saved? And I said, and y'all can imagine how Brother Ron was asking this. And I said, well, yes, sir, I am saved. So I don't remember how old I was. It was sometime in middle school. And I joined Fairview in Woodburn that day, and that's where I've been a member ever since. And then I was called to preach 3 days before my 16th birthday. We were going to a youth weekend in West Virginia, and Val and I just started dating. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll go on the youth trip. I'll get to spend time with her because, you know, we lived an hour apart at the time. And so we were on our way there. The van that we borrowed had tires on it. It was 22 years old, and we didn't even make it out of Bowling Green before we had a flat on the side of 65. And on our way there, the Lord spoke to me and said, you're preaching tonight. I said, no, I'm not. And I was in a mood that night. I didn't want to go to service that night, of course. And I made it through that service that night and made it back to the motel room. And I said, I'll be fine when I get to the motel room. Well, for some reason, I got a room all by myself. And the Lord worked on me all night. So I finally gave up about 2 in the morning and went and knocked on her dad's door and said, I've been called to preach. And, of course, he thought the worst, so he said he was prepared to leave me somewhere in West Virginia that night. But so that was 10 years ago, and actually Friday was my 10-year anniversary from my first sermon. So that's my testimony, or my salvation experience, my call to preach, because our testimony is much more than when we're saved. That's when we were saved up until the day we die is our testimony of what the Lord has done for us. But are thankful to be back here tonight, and like I said, I was here for probably 10 years. And so it's a blessing to be able to come back here, and brings back memories of my grandfather leading and singing up here and whatnot. So it's just good to be back. But If you have your Bibles with you, we're going to be reading from a couple different spots this evening, but we're going to start in John chapter 4, starting there in verse 10. And of course, this is the woman at the well. But I have a little story that goes along with this thought that I seen on one of my devotions this week, and I want to read it to you. So the story goes, it says, a martial arts student was meeting with his master and a teacher at a table, having a tea. The student said to his master, I've learned all that you have to teach me about defending myself. I want to learn one thing more now. Please teach me about the ways of God. The master took the tea kettle and started pouring the student's cup full of tea. Soon the cup was full and began to spill over onto the saucer. And the master continued to pour the tea until it spilled over the saucer and then onto the floor. The student finally said, stop, stop. The tea is spilling over and the cup cannot take any more. The master then looked at the student and said, you are so full of yourself that there is no room in your life for God. It is not possible for you to learn the ways of God until you learn to empty yourself. And how is that? It couldn't be any more fitting for the world today. Even in some of our churches, you know, we all get full of ourselves and we don't leave room for God. And we have to empty ourselves out to be allow God to come in. And that's going to be our thought for tonight. And the title is just simply empty. And that we need to empty ourselves out. But, you know, our churches are even getting like that. We get so full of ourselves that we don't allow God to come in. You know, we wonder, why aren't we feeling the Lord? Why didn't we have a good service today? Well, how many things did you bring in from the world today that stopped your attention from focusing on the Lord, but instead you were focusing about other things? You know, whether it be sports, whether it be a burden that you have, a family member, or whatever it may be, we can't bring any of that in with us. And we want to say, you know, well, God's gotten farther away from me. God's left me. God doesn't move. We push ourselves away from God. God's still at the same spot, and he hasn't moved any at all. But we move away from him. And a lot of times we push ourselves away from him because we don't want to be near him. You know, we say that we like light. You know, we go home, since it's getting dark early, the first thing we do is we turn the light on. But when we get close to the one in true light, we don't like it because it shows all of our flaws, all of our imperfections, and we realize that we're not as good as we think we really are. Because the closer we get to the Lord, the more imperfect we are because we're comparing ourselves to the most perfect thing there could be. But we fill our lives up with so many other things that we don't want to focus on the Lord. I mean, if we're in church 3 times a week, 2 days a week, you know, what are we doing with those other days? Are we doing it to try to help ourselves and have a better relationship with the Lord? Or are we getting closer to relationship with the world? And is the devil putting blinders on us so that we don't realize we're getting so deep into the world? And then we realize where we're at and we turn around and we go, how do we get back? And I know I found myself there. But we just get busy. And that's what the devil wants us to do. He wants us to be busy. He wants us to have those blinders on so we can't see how far away we're getting from the Lord. But that's just one of the devil's many tactics that we allow him to use on us. But we're going to talk about the main problem that we have and why we can't seem to be close to the Lord, and that is we have to empty ourselves so God can come in and fill us up. We have to empty out our hearts. We have to empty our soul so that the Lord can come in and fill it up. Because just like that cup, you know, when you get a cup so full, it can't hold anything else. But when we get so full of things of the world, then the Lord can't come in and fill us up and get us where we need to be. So if we flip over there to John, this is the woman at the well. We're going to be reading chapter 4, verses 10 through 18, starting off. I thought it was very fitting that the Lord laid this scripture on my heart because my first sermon was actually on these same verses. It was a different thought, but the same verses. But starting there, we're going to start in verse 9. It says, then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. And just to give a little background there, the Samaritans didn't really belong to anyone but themselves. You had the group, you had the Jews, and you had the Gentiles, then you had the Samaritans that were just off on their own, and they were Jewish, but they were only had one Jewish parent. So they were, as the Jews kind of looked at them as only being half Jew, so they didn't have any good for them, so they just kind of put them over here in their own country and stayed away from them. So that's the reason that this gives more importance, because Jesus was willing to talk to her as a Jew, even with the way the Jews thought of them. And then in verse 10, Jesus answered and said unto her, "If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it was that saith to thee, give me the drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." The woman said unto him, "Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, and his cattle?" Jesus answered and said unto her, "Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life." The woman said unto him, "Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw." Jesus said unto her, "Go, call thy husband, and come hither." The woman answered and said, "I have no husband." Jesus said unto her, "Thou hast said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou hast in whom thou now hast is not thy husband, and thou saidest thou truly." And the woman said unto him, "Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet." And we know how that goes. And she runs back and tells her hometown. But what we want to talk about is, you know, right here, Jesus told her, you know, "You've had five husbands." Obviously, this woman had had problems being able to fill that void that she had in her life, that emptiness that she had, just like the world has today, you know. The world, they want to turn to all these things to try to give them happiness, which we know happiness is just for a short time, where the joy that the Lord gives us, that's never going to end, and we will always have that. But even then, she was looking for something to give her that happiness, to fill that void. Excuse me. And she didn't know what it was, and it looks, you know, and she had gone from husband to husband, I'm assuming, to try to fill that void that she did not understand. And then Jesus came along and told her, you know, "This is what you need. You need that living water." But she had to empty herself to be able to get that. If we skip down a little bit, go down to verses 28 through 30, you know, it says, "The woman then left her water pot and went her way into the city and saith to the man, Come see a man which told me all things that I ever did. Is this not the Christ? Then they went out of the city and came unto him." So that woman had to empty herself of everything that she had, all the things that were holding her back, and then she got saved. And isn't that what we all had to do whenever we were lost? You know, for me, luckily, I was lost for less than a day. But, you know, some people go on being lost for years and years. But all we have to do is be willing to empty ourselves, to get everything out of the way and give everything up to the Lord. But that woman went back, and she was willing to empty herself up and empty herself and go forth and be able to be saved. But let's look at Jesus actually stopping to talk to her and how big of a deal it was for her to actually stop, for Jesus to stop and talk. So, of course, we know there in this society, men were the head of the household, and women were looked at, for lack of a better term, just as property. And that's how they were looked at. So for a woman to be talking to a man besides her husband was a very big deal, because, you know, they weren't really allowed to talk to anybody, any other males but their husbands. And then, because of who she was, you know, she was a Samaritan and she was talking to a Jew. Anybody in the Jewish sect would not have talked to her because she was a Samaritan. They would have, as we read the story of the Good Samaritan, you know, the priest and the Levite walked around the one that was hurt. You know, they would not have stopped and talked to her because of who she was. But Jesus was willing to stop and talk to her, just as he's willing to talk to any of us tonight or any time we need him. He's willing to talk to us and be with us. But Jesus didn't have anything to draw water with. So the woman, of course, was confused by that. Why come to this well if you don't have anything to draw water with? And what is this water that you're talking about, this everlasting water? You know, she didn't understand what was happening. But this woman did what, you know, she questioned the Lord. And she didn't necessarily know who he was at first, but he questioned her. Just like we do. We know who he is, but we still question him every day. You know, say you're supposed to stand up and say something in the service, and you question, why am I supposed to do that? I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm embarrassed to stand up. I don't want to do that, but, you know, the Lord owns everything. He owns us. He bought us with a price, and Paul tells us that we're slaves to him. So what's a little bit of obedience to be able to stand up and thank him for what he's done for you? But, you know, so the woman knew that she had to find something. She was looking for that happiness and being able to fill that void. And she realized what that void was after she had talked to Jesus. She realized what she was missing was that everlasting water that he was talking about. In the part that we didn't read tonight, just for time's sake, it goes on and she gets saved during that discourse. And she's able to run back and she tells everybody else in her town about what Jesus has done for her. And that right there just proves that it doesn't take a God-called preacher for someone to fall under conviction and spread the gospel, that anybody who's saved can go out and spread the gospel. But that woman was filling her life with useless things of the world. She was just seeing the next thing out there, much as the world does today, and they grab onto it. You know, like we all have, see the bandwagon sports fans. Whatever team's good right now is who they're rooting for, but the second that team starts doing bad, they're going to jump onto the next bandwagon. And that's often what the world wants to do today. They just want to grab onto that next thing. But, you know, she was in that honeymoon stage right there whenever she ran back to that town. And what I mean by that is, you know, you always see the fresh newlyweds, and they never want to leave each other. And, you know, they're just obsessed over each other. I always call that the honeymoon stage. Isn't that how we are when we first get saved? You know, we want to do everything for the Lord, and we're so willing to work for him, and we're filled with him. We're pushing all the things of the world away, and we're filled of the Lord. But then, you know, 6 months, a year, maybe not even that long, the devil finally creeps back in, and we get filled of things of the world, and we push all those things of the Lord out. And we get filled back up with the things that we don't need to, and we have to work on emptying ourselves out again. But a lot of our problems are, we don't realize that we're filling ourselves with the things of the world. We just think that we're living and doing what we need to do to survive. But if we ask the Lord to show us, you know, what's my heart truly filled with? Is it you or is it the world? We're not going to like the results that we see because we're going to be full of the world. And, you know, like we said earlier, the closer we get to the light, we realize how imperfect we are and that we don't like it. That's why we always, you know, we say we like being in light. We say, you know, we make a big deal when the lights go out, but you know, do we really like the light that much? You know, the way we live our life sometimes says that we don't really like it. But the Lord will show us where our hearts lie, just like he did at the woman at the well. You know, she had to empty herself. The Lord called her out for the way that she had been living her life. And doesn't he do the same to us? You know, we get so far away from him, and he calls us out. He's like, look at the way you're living. You don't need to be living that way. You need to come back to me. And it's like the one that was lost out of the 99 that he went searching for. And he went and got and brought back and he rejoiced. And I believe, you know, there, if you look at the other parables that were taught right there in that chapter, he's talking about the ones that were saved and that had drifted away from him and had gotten into the world and then had come back to the fold. And that's what he was talking about right there, because he says, you know, he's a shepherd. So that means that that sheep belong to him. And once we're saved, we belong to him and we need to live for him. But, you know, when the Lord calls us out today, we seem to run the opposite way. You know, someone says something about you, most of the time we just, you know, duck and hide. We don't want people to call out our faults, and it upsets us because we just don't want our faults to be called out. But that's just pride, and that's one of those things that go in and fills that void that whenever we were living for the world versus living for the Lord. But, you know, Paul talks to the saved about how we need to empty ourselves daily and that we need to allow God to fill us up. And that's going to be in the next place that we read tonight over in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 20 through 24. We're going to be doing a little flipping tonight, but over there, Ephesians chapter 4, it's right there in verse 20, starting in verse 20. It says, but ye have not so learned Christ, if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off concerning the former conversation of the old man, which is corrupt according to deceitful lust, and be renewed with the spirit of your mind, and that ye put on the new man, which is after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. And of course, I was talking about once we get saved right there, the saved man. And we all know that once we get saved, our old person should die. Of course, we're still going to sin because our flesh is sinful, but our old man should die. And I've heard a song here recently, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but the chorus of it says, if you miss the old me, then it's Jesus' fault. And isn't that all of us once we get saved? You know, we should all change for the good. We should become more Christ-like. If we say we're Christians, that means to be Christ-like. But if you look and study the things that Jesus was, are we truly that? Do we try to imitate or do the attributes that Jesus had? Or do we just try to fit into the world and not worry about what the Lord would have us to do? We have a radio program here in Bowling Green that comes on every Sunday morning, and the Lord laid a series of scriptures on me to do a trait of Jesus each week. And I can't remember how long that went on, several weeks, but it really showed me how far off I was trying to be in my Christian walk. When you look at all the things Jesus did, all the things that we need to do as Christians, and it really hit me hard, and the Lord said, you need to start doing better, but we all need to do better trying to live for Him. But, you know, our old man, once we're saved, our old man tries to come back every single day, and we have to fight them away every single day. You know, we say we're saved when we go out, but do we act like we're saved whenever we get out of the church building, or do we just try to blend? Do we blend in with the world? I know for me, oftentimes, I just try to blend in because I don't want to draw attention to myself. But, you know, the Lord says that we're a particular people. We're a light set on a hill, and we cannot be hid. And that's how we need to live. We need to let that light shine. You know, I know in our little Sunday school class this morning for the one my kids are in, like 3 and under, they sang this little light of mine. And we think of that song, and you know, we think about it being for little kids, and it's so elementary, but sometimes it takes thoughts like that to get us back to where we need to be, no matter how long we've been saved, because we need to let that little light shine. And, you know, it sounds elementary, but that's the essence of what the Lord wants us to do, is just to be obedient and to show the world our light and what He can do for us. But, you know, Paul knew a little bit something about the old man dying and becoming a new man. We all know Paul's testimony about how much he changed. And that's how we need to be. So our old man dies, and we don't need to worry about the things that are behind us, the things that we used to do, and the things that people might have used to know us for, whatever that may be. But instead, we need to set our eyes on what the Lord wants us to be and what we can become and what plan the Lord has for us. I mean, and it goes back to like talking about fruits. I mean, how do we judge trees? We judge them by the fruits. You know, how do we judge a crop? We judge it by the fruit that it yields. That's the same thing that we do. You know, we're not supposed to judge, but you can tell someone's saved by the fruits that they bear, whether they're good fruits or whether they're bad fruits. And, you know, the longer that we work for the Lord and the more that we do for the Lord, the better fruits that we should have and the higher yield that we should have. You know, this past year, we were in a drought, so the crops didn't do very good, and there wasn't a very good yield. But, you know, that can change. And if we're not close to the Lord and where we need to be, if we don't empty ourselves and let the Lord fill us, then we're going to be in that drought year, and we're not going to have a very good yield on our fruits. But if we're close to the Lord and we let Him fill us up, then it's going to be one of them great years for the yields, and that we'll be able to do something, and that people will see that we're being able to work for Him. And we will be blessed for it. But, you know, once saved, our soul should want to be good. You know, we should want to do good things. Our heart should want to work for the Lord. And our flesh is what we're going to be fighting. And our flesh, you know, it wants to sin. That's what it is. It's sinful flesh. But our heart should not want to sin. And we should want to work for the Lord. And we're always going to have that battleground going on within us about wanting to work for the Lord versus wanting to fit in with that society. And we have to have the willpower to be able to overcome our flesh and not give in to it so that we can go out and do what the Lord wants us to do, so that we will be emptied of ourselves and emptied of the things of the world. And we need to be filled with the Spirit instead of being filled with those things of the world. And I know for me, my life seems to be so much easier. My week seemed to be better. Work seemed to be better whenever I'm close to the Lord and I'm filled with His Spirit. Versus when I start to drift away from Him, it feels like my week is horrible, like nothing goes right. But I got to thinking while I was studying, the Lord really opened my eyes. That's not Him doing anything. That's just my attitude changing versus when I'm close to Him because I have that joy and it makes everything better. When you have that joy of the Lord around you versus when you start to drift away from Him, then you go, you know, you start to get negative about everything and everything seems to go wrong, but it's just because of the attitude that you have because you're not where you need to be with the Lord. But, you know, it's just our perspectives change because our perspectives is based on how we see things versus how other people see things. It's all based on our life and just, you know, what mood that we in and the events that we face in our lives. So that leads us, you know, that woman was, she emptied herself, the woman at the well. Then Paul tells us, you know, what we need to do to be saved, saved people to be filled and what we need to do daily. And then if we flip over to Jeremiah chapter 18, it puts it all in together. It talks about the potter and the clay. We're going to flip over there to Jeremiah chapter 18, verses 1 through 6. And this will be the last place we read for tonight once I get over there. Starting Jeremiah, starting there in 18, starting there in verse 1, it said, "The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, Arise, and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause thee to hear my words." You know, and as today, if the Lord told us to go somewhere so we could hear His words and that we should, so we could understand them, we'd say, no, I'm not going there. I'm not doing what you want me to. You can tell me right here in my recliner. You know, we just, for lack of a better term, we get lazy and I'm right there. And then, verse 3, "Then I, Jeremiah, went down to the potter's house, and behold, high water work on the wheels. And the vessel that he made out of the clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again, another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to make it. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, O house of Israel, can I not do you as this potter, saith the Lord? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are ye in my hand, O house of Israel. And at what instant I shall speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom to pluck up and to pull down and destroy it. If that nation against whom I have pronounced turn from their evil, I will repent of the evil that I thought to do unto them." And of course, what we want to look at there is the clay and how they made that clay and how that potter, you know, the first vessel they made, they didn't like it. So they wet down that clay again to be able to remake it and to make a new vessel. And isn't that what happens to us when we're saved? You know, we're that marred vessel that's not really any good for the Lord's work because we're just full of sin. And then He makes us new when He saves us and makes us into that new vessel. But, you know, when I read that, I'm a visual learner. So I think of someone, you know, we've seen on documentaries or something in school, the people that are making the clay, working that wheel. And I thought about that, and it takes a lot of work to be able to do that. And it's so easy to mess up, you know, and get a lump off one side so that you have a oval bowl instead of a circle bowl. And it's so easy to mess that up, and you have to keep it wet enough so that it doesn't harden to where you can't make it into what you want anymore. But from the reading, we need to look at us as being formed as clay and allowing the Lord to fill us. No, the first time the potter formed that, they didn't like the way that it was made. And so, you know, I kind of look at that as when we're lost. And that's us. The clay was off. It was full of the world. Now, we can look at it as us when we're saved, too, whenever we get filled with the things of the world and we need to empty that. But the clay was full of unwanted things. And I'm sure, just going through my head, if that clay had any impurities in it, it would make it hard to form. And it wouldn't be what the potter wanted. And that's how we are with the Lord. You know, it's hard for Him to form us when we have these impurities in our soul, when we're full of the things of the world instead of being full of Spirit and what He wants to have us in. But then when that clay is empty, it doesn't have any impurities in it, it's a lot easier to form, and you can make it into what you want it made. And that clay, you know, it's like what we need to be. It's empty. The Lord can work with it. The Lord can fill it up with His Spirit and what He needs, instead of having to push all the things out of that might be full of the world. And the Lord wants to mold us daily. You know, He wants to make us into what we need to be every day. He's preparing us for something now and molding us for something now that may happen 20 years down the road, but He's preparing us now. We may not see what it is, we may not understand what it is, but He's preparing us now for whatever that may be down the road. And we need to be willing to let Him use us and be willing to let Him mold us, and we need to empty ourselves so that we can be filled of what He wants us to be filled of. You know, and God wants to use us. You know, all we are sinners saved by grace. He doesn't have to use us, but He chooses to use us. And that should make us be willing to work right there, because the One who created everything that we see wants to use us and wants to talk with us, and that should make us want to work right there. So shouldn't we want to empty ourselves so that we can be filled with His goodness, with His holiness? But as we start to close down tonight, I saw this. I played football in high school, and I still follow football, so this really spoke to me. And I saw this on a quote, and it really spoke to me, and it really went around with this thought this morning. And it's a quote from Tom Landry back whenever the Cowboys were good and they were winning the Super Bowls. And it said, "The overwhelming emotion in a few days among the players of the Cowboys football team, how empty that gold was, that there must be something more." So they had just won the Super Bowl, you know, probably the biggest game in all of sports now. And then a few days after the Super Bowl, they were just like, you know, okay, so what's next? You know, they thought they would get that trophy and that it would be better, that void would be filled, but they felt empty once they won it, like they needed something more. But all they ever worked for was to get that trophy, just proving that there has to be something more to fill us, to give us that joy. Excuse me. But there's nothing else but God that can fill that emptiness, that can fill that void. You know, like the woman at the well who is searching the world to try to find what she needed, try to find that joy, try to find that next best thing. But she never found it. She never found the things to fill that void. And the best thing to fill that void is the Lord. You know, and once we're saved, we know that, the best thing we can have is the Lord, and we can have that void. But I know for me, even after being saved, you still have a void sometimes, and you don't know what it is. And, you know, we want to fill it with things of the Lord, or things of the world, but, you know, being saved, we know better than that, and know that we need to go to the Lord. You know, it's that joy versus happiness. We want to be happy, but happiness doesn't last. You know, it's just like with the sports teams. They can win, and you're happy for a few days, but then it's over with. Where with that joy that the Lord gives you, it's never ending. It's always going to be there. You don't have to worry about it leaving. You know it's going to be there. But we can search the world over, and we can look and look, and we will never find anything as great as God's mercy, as great as what God can offer us. So tonight, you know, as we wind down and we go to our respective places in the morning, wherever it may be, work or whatever happens, I've got a question for all of us, including myself. Well, it's actually a couple questions. But are we willing to empty ourselves and allow the Lord to fill that void, that empty that we have, with His Spirit? Are we willing to allow God to mold us into what we need to be, whatever it may be, because He knows what it needs to be? And then are we going to allow Him to use that clay that we have for His purpose? Are we going to empty ourselves and let the Lord come in and let Him use us? Or are we going to continue doing what we are, you know, walking that line between the world and trying to serve the Lord, where we all seem to be too often walking that line, trying to straddle it so that we think that we're living the best of both worlds, but we know we can't do that. We cannot have two masters. So as we go this week, just ask that y'all would ask, you know, question that as you go throughout your day. Am I willing to empty myself and do what the Lord would want me to do? Or do I just want to keep filling myself up with the world and just be happy in the world instead of doing what the Lord wants us to do? And again, I want to thank the church for allowing this opportunity to come this way tonight. And I'll go ahead and turn the service back over to Brother Casey.
Certainly thank the Lord tonight for the good message. Appreciate the word that's went out tonight. And I'm so thankful tonight as I began to think about the clay and how that God is still working on us and shaping us and molding us into something that He can use. And had a man one time had been out of church for many years and come to unite with the church over there where I was pastor at, and before we come here, and stood up and gave his testimony, and he said, "I'm just thankful to know that the Lord hadn't allowed my clay to dry out." He said, "After all these years," he said, "He's still working on me. And I'm thankful to know that if you've been saved by the grace of God, your clay's never going to dry out. It may get a little lumpy, as the brother said, from time to time. But I'm thankful to know that we're still on the potter's wheel and he's shaping us and molding us into something that he can use." Appreciate you, Brother Adam. Appreciate your study, brother. Want to come around and